KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset. Starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sitkanap to Castle Cape, small craft advisory tonight and Wednesday. Today, north winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. Tonight, northwest winds 25 knots, seas 4 feet. And Wednesday, northwest winds 25 knots, seas 5 feet. Castle Cape to Cape Tolstoy, today, northwest winds 15 knots, seas 3 feet. Tonight, northwest winds 20 knots, seas 3 feet. And Wednesday, northwest winds 20 knots, seas 3 feet. Cape Tolstoy to Cape Sarashef, today, west winds 20 knots, seas 4 feet. Tonight, northwest winds 20 knots, seas 4 feet. And Wednesday, northwest winds 15 knots, seas 3 feet. Port Hyde and Nelson Lagoon, today, west winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. Tonight, west winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. And Wednesday, northwest winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. Nelson Lagoon to Cape Sarashef, today, west winds 20 knots, seas 6 feet. Tonight, northwest winds 15 knots, seas 6 feet. And Wednesday, northwest winds 15 knots, seas 5 feet. Your detailed forecast for the Alaska Peninsula. Today, a slight chance of rain and snow showers before 1 p.m., then a chance of rain showers. Mostly cloudy, highs near 41, west winds 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts to 20. Tonight, a chance of showers before 7 p.m., cloudy, then gradually becoming partly cloudy. Lows around 33, northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 20. And Wednesday, mostly sunny, highs around 40, northwest winds 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25. Your tide predictions for the Popoff Island. There was a low tide at 4:21 at 3 foot 7 inches, a high at 9:45 a.m. at 5 foot 7 inches, and a low at 5:07 at 6 inches. Your sun rose at 7:19 this morning, and your sun will set at 10:02, giving us 14 hours and 42 minutes of daylight hours. And that was your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset here on KSDP and KAEB. I am Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Coming up on KUCB News, the Unalaska City Council will decide tonight how much funding they will give to the school district and local nonprofits. And some coastal Alaska towns are experiencing the harsh effects of climate change more intensely than almost anywhere on the planet. Stay tuned.
Local programming on KUCB is made possible by the Aleutian Housing Authority, providing affordable housing services in the Aleutian Pribilof Islands region and working hard to create employment, job training opportunities, and promote economic development. More information at ahaak.org.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Maggie Nelson with some local news on Tuesday, April 22nd, 2025. The Unalaska City Council will decide tonight how much money they can afford to give the island's school district. The district is asking for just over $6 million, and they're looking at a roughly $1 million deficit for the upcoming fiscal year. Superintendent Kim Hanisch told council members earlier this month that's largely because the per-student state funding has remained flat for several years.
In the history, that BSA, base student allocation, hasn't significantly increased by the state in about 14 years, which is causing our gap in expenditures and revenues.
More than two dozen Unalaska students gathered earlier this month to march in support of a bill that would bump state funding. About a week later, Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed the $1,000 increase to the state's per-student BSA formula, which the legislature had approved. He proposed an increase to the BSA of around half that size. Hanisch presented the district's budget to the city council in early April. She says the budget is built on an estimated enrollment of 330 students. That number is down significantly from just a few years back.
Last year, we built the budget on what we thought was a pretty stable number of 350. We were really surprised when we were down so low this year, which scared those repeat committee members, like, oh, we got to be careful on this one here, because that really hurt us financially when we budgeted for so many students.
Now, city council members must decide if they want to give the district its full ask. Councilmember Danine Luby applauded the district's budget committee for making some hard decisions. Still, she says she's not sure about relying on student fundraising to replace some of the school activities funding.
You know, I struggle with even cutting that $100,000 and having the kids do fundraising for that. First off, they don't really have a lot of time to do fundraising. And the other part of that is that fundraising goes on the same community members, you know, where if the city funds that stuff, it's spread out over everybody, you know, the whole, you know, because everybody pays taxes to pay for this.
The city council is expected to decide on its contribution tonight. They have until May 1st to make that decision. When Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed the increase to school funding last week, he said the bill was too expensive and didn't include policies that he says would bolster school choice and improve student performance. Instead, he proposed a smaller funding and policy package for schools. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone spent hours on the phone Friday talking with people who lead schools and school districts at the center of this debate.
There were some themes.
My reaction was, once again, disappointment.
I think frustration is the word I'm going to choose here.
Frustrating and a little bit confusing.
It's our students that are going to lose out.
Those are voices from across the state. Superintendent Kim Hanisch in Unalaska, Ketchikan High School Principal Rick Dormer, Anchorage School Board President Andy Holloman, and the head of the Northwest Arctic Borough School District, Terry Walker. Walker leads a district based in Kotzebue with 12 schools spread out over a land area about the size of Virginia. She says each of those schools is the center of a community.
Everything happens in that building. Weddings and funerals and meetings, because it's the only largest place for gathering for the whole community. Oftentimes, many of the villages have catastrophes, floods, the electricity goes out, their housing freezes up, and the school is a safe place to go.
And she says her school's ability to keep that up is at risk. Schools have gotten infusions of one-time funding in recent years as lawmakers and the governor have failed to come to terms on a long-term funding boost. But she says costs keep going up, and she's looking at deep cuts to core programs, student activities, even second helpings at meals for hungry students.
We are really cut to the bare bones right now, chipping at the bones, actually.
So Walker is disappointed that the governor vetoed a bill that would boost basic per-student funding, the base student allocation, by $1,000. And she says the $560 increase Dunleavy is proposing instead won't stop the bleeding.
That does not cover half of the deficit that we are looking at.
In the state's largest school system, the Anchorage School District, School Board President Andy Holloman says leaders are in a similar position.
We're starving a little bit, and there's not much food on the table to begin with.
That's not to say the veto was unexpected. Lawmakers had been working with the governor on a compromise. Dunleavy has said again and again that any funding increases should be tied to policy measures that improve the state's school system. And senators stripped out those policy measures shortly before the House and Senate approved the bill. The governor called it a joke and said he would veto it before the final version even passed. Holloman's not expecting any surprises in an upcoming veto override vote either. The bill passed with a one-vote majority in each chamber and takes two-thirds to override. He says he's just fed up with the politics of it all.
We don't actually understand what the strategy is.
I'm supposed to say here that Holloman is speaking for himself, not the board. They haven't had a chance to talk about it as a group yet. Now, the governor isn't just proposing $560 in basic funding. He's also proposing $35 million in what he calls targeted funding. That's an increase in formula funding for homeschool, plus an incentive program that would provide a boost for each young student who performs well on literacy assessments. Dunleavy is pitching the total package as equivalent to a $700 base student allocation increase. But school leaders like Deidre Jensen, the superintendent in Sitka, say that leaves them with a lot of questions.
Does that mean that we're going to get it beforehand because we've had good scores, because we've shown growth? Well, what does it mean for the ones that have been doing all these cuts and they're not making as good growth? Like, what does it mean?
Another question, where do we go from here? That's the mood. Uncertainty. Structural uncertainty because of the timeline on which the state funds education. Uncertainty because nobody's sure where the political football will land. Rick Dormer, the principal of Ketchikan High School, says he's worked in the private sector for Hewlett-Packard and Nike.
None of them run a business like this. So, and they make shoes. Those are dead, inanimate objects. We're working with people's children. I have children in Alaskan schools today. Like, I want them to explain why this is an okay business model and a funding model for people's children.
Dormer says he wants lawmakers and the governor to work together to figure out something. That was another theme I heard a lot in my conversations with school leaders from Ketchikan to Kotzebue. They want to see the state's elected leaders come up with a compromise that keeps schools functioning. Whether they will in the next 30 or so days before the legislative session ends, well, we'll have to see. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Many of Alaska's coastal villages are experiencing the existential threat posed by human-caused climate change more acutely than almost anywhere on the planet. Researchers say parts of Alaska are warming up to four times faster than other places on Earth. And while intense storms, rapidly eroding coastlines, and thawing permafrost wreak havoc on their homes, rural residents are grappling with the impacts to infrastructure. That struggle is captured in a new documentary called Alaska's Vanishing Native Villages from the PBS program Frontline, out today for Earth Day. It follows correspondent Patty De La Hungva as she examines the reality on the ground in some of Alaska's most far-flung and vulnerable villages. De La Hungva told Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove that some of the most meaningful conversations she had were with the kids in those villages, including Hooper Bay, one of many hit hard by Typhoon Murbach in the fall of 2022.
And they were telling me how stressful it was to experience Murbach, and it turned their village into three islands, and they couldn't get across the water to their relatives' homes to check on them to see how they were doing. You know, they saw houses being lifted up and turned around, and then, of course, damage to other houses. So that's a lot of stress to live under. But I asked the kids, you know, think about, you're in high school today, in 50 years, where do you think you'll be living? And some of them said probably Anchorage, because they're seeing that, and what is their future?
Yeah, no doubt. It's fair to say in some of those places, either relocation efforts are already happening, like in Newtok, in Muktuvik. Some places are still just talking about that. And I thought one thing that was really interesting about the film was just that relocating is not just about moving the physical things of the village up to higher ground. There's like an emotional thing going on there too, in this history of displacement. I wondered if you could talk about that.
We do touch on that in the film, because as Native people, and I'm Hopi, that we understand the forced relocation by government policies. And that's what happened to one tribe that lives in Hooper Bay today, and that's the Native village of Paiute. So in the film, it's explained how when the government agents came in and said, you have to move to Hooper Bay, there's a school there, your kids have to go to school. What happened was it split up the village. So we have that history of relocation. And that's hard for all of our tribes because, again, our connection to the land. And it's very clear in the film, the connection to the land that the people in the different villages have. So they know their land, they know their water, they know the foods they need to harvest, at any given time of the year, whether it's from the sea or whether it's from the land. And when you have to relocate, that connection has that potential for being severed.
Yeah. There's a man that you talk to in the film. He was involved in relocation efforts, and he talks about how difficult it is and how many different agencies have to be involved. And he mentions that there really is no central agency for this kind of complicated relocation effort. Did that surprise you, that there just really isn't any kind of central agency that deals with this?
That was surprising. Because, you know, you want to go and ask the people in charge, you know, what's going on? And there was no one agency. So we asked many agencies what's going on. And the man you're talking about is Max Neal, and he is with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. So he told us, I think we didn't use the exact number, but it's more than 80 different steps to relocation, and how each village that's in danger has to follow, you know, step one, step two. And the first step is identifying land, which another expert, Tom Ravens, explained that most of the interior there is marshy due to the permafrost and all the ponds of water. So it's not easy to find land to move to. And then, of course, then you have to look at who owns the land. So I think people will be surprised at that, how marshy that area of Alaska is, and why that is compounding the problem with finding locations to move to.
Toward the end of the film, I think it is at the end of the film, we return to Kotzebue, which of course is kind of a larger hub community in that region. And we find out that a huge storm has breached the seawall that cost millions and millions of dollars. And of course, this is happening in smaller communities that don't have seawalls, that don't have the resources for that sort of thing. And as the film ends on that, I wonder, is there any hope? I mean, is it just that we're left kind of wondering, like, what happens next?
That's a question we asked the people. And the answer was, you know, we're resilient, we're going to figure it out. And, you know, they've lived there, they know their land, and now they're having to make changes. But that's one thing, you know, it's not that poor them, it's they're talking about how resilient they are. And for me to look at the situation and again say, gosh, this is really stressful, that's my observation. And to talk to the people, they were very adamant that we know this land, we know who we are, and we will survive, and we will continue.
That was Patty Delahunva, who directed and produced Alaska's Vanishing Villages, a documentary film from the PBS program Frontline, debuting today on Earth Day. Now let's take a look at community events coming up. The Kawalunga tribe will host a beach cleanup with snacks and prizes this evening at 6 o'clock at the Dutch Harbor Spit. Materials collected will become part of the recycled art project the following evening. The Unalaska City Council meets this evening at 6 o'clock at City Hall. Council members are expected to discuss funding for the island's school district, as well as community support and capital grants. Local nonprofits and the school district presented their funding requests at a council meeting earlier this month. For more information on agenda items, head to our community calendar at kucb.org. The Kawalungan Wellness Program will host a culture night tomorrow evening from 5:30 to 8 at the tribal office. This week, they'll be making crafts using beach materials from the beach cleanup today. Everyone is welcome to attend. And the Museum of the Aleutians and Unalaskans Against Sexual Assault and Family Violence are co-hosting trivia night this month. Trivia starts at 6:30 Thursday evening at the Norwegian Rat Saloon. A 50-50 cash raffle at the event will support both local nonprofit organizations. And this weekend, archaeologist and museum director Dr. Virginia Hatfield will present a lunch and learn on the science of garbology and what we can learn about human behavior from landfills and household trash. The event will be Saturday afternoon, 12:30, inside the Unalaska City Library. The event is part of Zero Waste Week activities. The Unalaska Public Library will offer a craft session for creating journals from recycled materials on Sunday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Basic supplies are provided, and participants are welcome to bring personal mementos. Finally, Unalaska student athletes are heading out to compete in the Native Youth Olympics Games in Anchorage. The competition kicks off Thursday, and we will be airing the event live at noon, so we won't have a newscast that day. For more information on all of the community events this week, head to our community calendar at kucb.org. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Maggie Nelson, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.
It's time now for your community window here on KSDP, starting with job openings. The QT Tribe of Sandpoint is looking for a grant writer, an executive director, an environmental assistant, and an administrative assistant. The Shimigan Corporation of Sandpoint is hiring a bartender. The Palouf Harbor Tribe is hiring a tribal environmental coordinator. The City of Sandpoint is hiring a part-time pull tabs assistant, a full-time temporary public works laborer, a full-time temporary office assistant. Eats is hiring a behavioral health trainee and a community health representative. Both of those positions can be in Sandpoint or King Cove. They're also hiring a clinical information clerk for King Cove, a community health aide for Falls Pass and Nelson Lagoon, and a clinical information clerk slash janitor for Cold Bay. Community announcements. Sandpoint, the City of Sandpoint has issued a notice that the water in the boat harbor will be shut off this morning and will remain off for the rest of the day while maintenance is being performed. And there will be a regular meeting of the Aleutians East Borough School District today at 6:30 p.m. at the Borough Building. You can also tune into that live here on KSDP. And that's all for the community window. If you have anything you'd like for us to put on the air or web, you can contact us through email at cw@apradio.org. You can call us at 907-383-5737, or you can still fax us at 907-383-5271. Also look for updates, meeting archives, and more at apradio.org. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
You are listening to 830 AM KSDP in Sandpoint, Alaska.
Yeah. wish you were listening. I'm the creature in disguise. There's a man with a whip on his silver hip, living between my eyes. Ow! I'm the cat from the alley. I'm the three-foot booty man. He's going in the silver cell, which I understand. Ow! Like a song in space and time, it's a ripple. If it's hers, well, it must be mine.
So happy. I've seen and the roads in between make me wonder why I'm searching for my dreams up in the sky.
You are listening to KSDP in Sandpoint, 89.1 FM. I'm King Cole, Alaska.
Going down.